My name is Sean Wildermuth. I'm one of the Wilderminds, and we are going to talk about responsive design today. The whole idea behind responsive design is that we have websites that we need to be able to display on a variety of devices. Now, these devices, vary from your phone, obviously, to tablets, laptops, desktop computers. And traditionally, the way we've handled this is through having a variety of different implementations of our sites. There are several problems that occur when we're trying to look at mobile development. And they're not just the device size themselves, but dealing with the different way we interact with those devices. For example, the device size obviously is an issue, but also screen resolution. When we look at the idea of just taking an existing site and porting it down to something the size of a phone, a 3 or 4 inch device, the size of individual pixels becomes an issue because you need to be able to read it on those smaller devices. As everyone who owns a phone knows, taking a desktop app, taking a desktop website and simply displaying it on a phone makes it pretty unreadable unless there's some way to really display the text in a way that makes sense on a phone. We also have the problem of orientation. When you look at some devices, iPad, phones especially, we're looking at them in different orientations than we're used to. The websites that you display normally on a computer are normally, landscape or horizontal in nature, and horizontal scrolling is a bad idea. And so simply taking something that's horizontal in nature or landscape in nature and porting it over to a portrait device, having the user scroll left to right to be able to read or to view or to, consume your content is just pain. And lastly, we have the problem of the way we interact with these sites. We have the idea of how to touch versus click. The idea of the way that you're dealing with touch on a website is a very different experience than you're used to doing it with a mouse. Mice tends to be a lot more precision oriented because you have usually a single pixel point that you're clicking at, whereas with touch you're dealing with a much larger area. Secondarily to that, you also have a problem of the finger itself being in the way of what they're touching. And so you have users trying to touch fairly small hotspots and giving them the ability to make mistakes, that the area that they're tapping into or sliding through should be big enough that they can not only tap with their fingers but be able to tell what they're touching or tapping on without having to lift the finger again and look at what's underneath. There's a number of solutions that are out there right now. The one we're going to talk about today is responsive design. And this is to use your design elements to really adapt your websites to these different screen resolutions, these different facilities on particular pages. You can also create mobile views. MVC 4 supports this in a pretty rich way of being able to render individual pages based on device sniffing. Am I on an iPhone? And am I on an Android device, etc.? The URLs are the same, but what they're rendering tends to be different. We're not going to talk about that specifically, but that is something that you're going to want to look at for specific needs. And the tried and true method is to actually create mobile versions of websites. And while this is still an avenue you can pursue, this tends to be where you're talking about more app-specific websites that are really web applications. Facebook is a good example of this in that the experience of Facebook on a phone, even in the web browser, is a very different experience than you would see on a computer. And so dealing with that by creating, whole different sets of implementations of your site is a pretty common occurrence. So let's dig into responsive design. The key here is to tell CSS that you have some rules based on the size of the screen. You're not going to build whole new CSS rules for each device. You're going to only include the exceptions. And media queries become kind of the magic here. So when we look at creating our CSS or design for a particular website, we have the main CSS that contains most of our design, and this usually indicates what the design looks like when you're developing for a desktop or a laptop sort of orientation. This is the default implementation. To go against these, you're going to look at the resolutions or the screen widths that the device is working with and make some exceptions. So 960 pixels wide is typically just standard browsers on an operating system. You know, you can make some assumptions about 1024 by 768 being the minimum, and if you're doing some smart design, you're you know, making sure that it looks good on much larger displays. But for the most part, standard browsers are going to look and act like they will at 960 pixels and above, and usually we don't even need to deal with those. Standard browsers are in that main CSS or the common design. You then have landscape tablets, which tend to be smaller than the 1060. When you look at Motorola Zoom and a lot, the Nexus 7, those are in this landscape tablet. And what's interesting here is, unlike on the desktop where the user can rotate the machine, but it doesn't really do them any good, when you're talking about tablets and phones, you're going to have to deal with the resolutions both of landscape and portrait. So we have this small little window of 768 to 959, which is tablet portrait and up. And so these are inclusive of the main tablet landscape, but may only apply when someone's using a tablet in a portrait position. You then have the typical mobile sizes. Again, these are going to be common among the mobile sizes, and within them are going to be mobile landscape versus mobile portrait. And when we say mobile, we typically are talking about phones at this point. We're talking about iPhones and Galaxy S3s and those sorts of devices. We can make exceptions for very small level screens as well, but typically these days I'm not bothering with, you know, worrying about the 320 pixel size, you know, the BlackBerry, old generation BlackBerries and old generation Windows Mobile screens as much. I'm kind of discounting them, but if you have specific needs to deal with them, the same rules apply for really any of these screen sizes. Now, one thing you should note is that the screen sort of indicates a commonality in that when you're dealing with these rules, the rules for 0 to 767 should be ones that are common across both mobile portrait and mobile landscape. So you might think, oh, I might make the font sizes I'm going to be dealing with in these mobile sizes all the same, but when I'm dealing with mobile portrait or mobile landscape, I may be deciding that the wrapping or the size of elements in these individual sizes, you know, may be separate between mobile landscape and mobile portrait. And that's a good way to kind of think about this. These media queries allow us to really leverage these cascading rules and to have the rules inside of these media queries overrule the rules that are in more upstream rules. So it may be the rules that are in the standard common CSS, or it may be the rules that are earlier in the larger sizes. So more specific rules will overrule these earlier rules to allow us to really deal with this. So here's a quick example. In my CSS, I have a main section, and it has a bunch of rules in it, but one of the things I'm defining is the width of the main page. I'm expecting, you know, 1024 pixel or greater devices, so I'm going to say this main section is going to be 989 pixels wide. And that works fine when we're dealing with desktop browsers. If I want to deal with these smaller sizes, screens that are between, you know, 768 and 959, I can then take that main rule and include it in here to say when the screen is the smaller size, make it this width instead so it'll fit on the smallest of these devices. And then later we can say anything up to 767, go ahead and make it this even smaller size of 470 pixels. So in this way, we're defining rules and then overriding them based on, you know, what the screen size we're dealing with. Now, CSS doesn't care about what the device you're on. These aren't device-specific settings. These are screen-specific settings. So let's take a look at this real quick. I've got a ASP.NET project here, and it just has a simple implementation of some data. So let me just run it in Firefox briefly. And I'm using Firefox with both the web developer toolbar as well as Firebug. So some of the techniques I'm going to talk about are going to need those two plugins. Here in my desktop version of this, it's exactly the way we would expect. We have a nice wide, large implementation of our page. And as we look at the individual page, we're getting that experience. But as we go to smaller sizes, let's go ahead and just resize our window. We can see that this starts to fall apart pretty quickly. We're getting a lot of clipping when we get small. We're getting things wrapping in different ways. And so this won't necessarily look very good on anything but, you know, a desktop browser. We may get some benefit in that for maybe an iPad or maybe a tablet. In portrait mode, it would look okay, or maybe even in landscape mode, but we'd like to be able to really tweak that experience without writing a ton of actual code, or worse yet, implementing each page separately for each of these devices. The way this works is simply the magic is in our CSS sheet. So our particular project uses a CSS file called site.css. And this is pretty typical in that it defines a lot of the standard CSS that we're seeing on the page. And then at the end of this, I've defined three sections. Ordinarily, you may have more of these depending on what you need, but for our example, we're going to start with three. We're going to say when our screen is between these widths, I'm going to have some rules that apply. When the screen is these widths, I'm going to have a rule of rules that apply, and then finally, when we have these smaller screens, usually phone screens, we're going to define these rules. And in this way, we can really pick rules that are going to change our look and feel. So let's go up in the style sheet just a minute, and I'm using some columns here, and these columns are actually being used in our design to define these two columns of data. So these actually sit in elements that are defined in a class of 1/2. So I'm going to use Firebug real quick just to confirm this, just so you can see the actual CSS that's being used. If I go ahead and grab our element here, we can see that they are using a class called 1/2, and this 1/2 is defined right now as 460. It's defined as 460 because in our CSS, our 1/2 is defined here. We're also defining as part of our 1/2 that we're floating this element. Now, this is a good logical place where we can look at using responsive design to change the way our project looks. Let's come down here into our media screen for just the first size, and let's add a new rule for 1/2. And in here, let's make the width smaller. Let's say 350 pixels. Now, this new rule is only going to apply when our screen matches these. So let's make a copy of this for all three rule sizes. And let's make this one 200 and maybe make this one 150. So as the screen physically changes in size, we're going to get these sizes. Now, on the desktop, we can just resize the window and we can see this, but we're going to also notice that on devices, typically on phones and tablets, we're going to be dealing with the browser as full screen, so we know that these aren't necessarily going to change. So if we take our browser window and pay attention to the size of these elements, let me make this a little smaller so we can get out of the way. We'll notice that as we cross some of the boundaries that are, whoops, I have to refresh it. As we cross these boundaries, the size of the elements is getting smaller. And ultimately, down to our really small size. And so in this way, we're adapting based on the width of our screen. Now let's see what this means when we're talking about individual actual devices. I'm using the web developer toolbar's resize, and I've defined some standard devices out there, just some device sizes. So if I want to see what width this would be on an iPhone 4, this is an iPhone 4's resolution. And this is what the site would look like width-wise on an iPhone 4. Now we can probably play with some of the widths here, maybe even use percentage widths here to really get the experience we want. But we can see that we're changing that. If we go ahead and resize it again to something like a Windows phone, this is getting even smaller because the width of that phone is in fact smaller. And then finally on the Nexus 7, we're getting this experience. Again, we're using floats and widths, so we can probably tweak these individual values to get the exact experience we want. One of the interesting things is we're not just talking about width, we're talking about font size, we're talking about layout as well. So if we look at this, maybe when we get down to the really small size, we not only want to specify the width, but maybe we actually just want to make the width 100% and float none, right? Maybe on the phone, instead of having two columns that are really narrow, we just want to make, let me refresh it again. We want to make it as we get small, that it's just going to take the width of our element at, because we're dealing with a fairly small screen. And so this is going to allow us to make those sort of ad hoc runtime changes to the way we're designing this. Now, doing this for classes is pretty simple, but let's talk about something more interesting. We've got this header information here, this navigation up here. And the navigation, as we get smaller, just kind of sort of moves in, and if we had more than three elements, this might be too small. One of the things we can do is change the way that these elements are actually being applied. So let's go ahead and use Firebug again, and let's look at this header for a moment. We look at the nav element here. Let me zoom in a little. We can actually see that the nav element has two pieces in it. It has a unordered list and then has the select, and it being dim is the clue to us that the select is actually hidden right now. One of the techniques you can use with responsive design is to hide and show elements based on screen size. So if we go back to our design for a minute, and we take our element, which happens to be menu, display none, and go ahead and show the other element, which was nav select. We can see by making this change, we can change elements into using, here we're using a traditional click, and then as we get smaller, we can go ahead and make it something like a drop-down for that navigation as well. Now, it doesn't matter what you're using here, but in this case, you are developing it twice on an individual page, but showing or hiding it as necessary. Looks like we have a question on the Q&A, so let me take a look. The question that's up on the Q&A list right now says, do we plan on uploading this project? You will, this project and this slide deck will be available on my website after the talk, probably tomorrow morning, wildermuth.com. And the second question is, what are you using to select the different sizes in Firefox? In Firefox, I'm using this bar up here called the Web Developer Toolbar. It's an add-on. I'll include a link to it in the notes on my blog post. But this allows me to do this resizing and also allows me to throw the resize size into the header here so that I can really see what I'm resizing to, what the exact sizes of both the window and the viewport are. As I'm debugging that, that can become pretty helpful. Or I have set up standard resize sizes using the same facility to go to, like I said, Nexus 7, iPad 1 and 2. Of course, going to iPad 3 works, but my resolution isn't quite high enough to get the 2,000 pixels wide, so it's just going to make it giant. But this will allow you to quickly test on the different form factors for those different pages. We have a couple more questions, but I'm going to get back to the slides because there's a few more pieces I want to talk about, and then we'll start answering more questions. So there are cases where responsive design will really get us pretty far into what we want to do as far as changing the design with this responsive design. But we also want to talk about there are cases, especially in mobile devices, where the design you're dealing with is very different from what you want as an experience for those users. And that's where some mobile frameworks like jQuery Mobile, Kendo UI Mobile, there's a handful of them out there that will help you do this. And this will allow you to do styling that gives a more app-like experience to the user. So I'm using jQuery Mobile in this particular example, and I have a page that defines a jQuery Mobile page. And the difference with the mobile frameworks, and the reason I want to mention in the idea about responsive design, is that they're allowing you to create something similar to a single page application, even though you're defining multiple logical pages all in a single request. And so when you're dealing with mobile websites, especially on phones where maybe your bandwidth isn't the best, not all of us have 4G yet, being able to actually go and view something that looks and feels a little bit more like an app is certainly useful. So let me resize this to a phone size, and let me change this to the example I have. And so this is going to look and feel a little bit more like an actual app. This is all HTML and JavaScript, and will allow us to do sort of page-to-page navigation. This page-to-page navigation is inter-page navigation. It's not actually necessarily going from page request to page request. This is going to allow you to have some logic between these individual logical pages that are shown in the browser, and then they're going to look a lot like more like an app as it would look like on an iPhone or an Android. And the last piece that really pulls a lot of this together before we start diving into lots of questions is the way that mouse and touch are different. Now, dealing with responsively with the way that this stuff works is that you're going to want to be able to do two pieces. One is implementing things like swipe, but also being able to detect whether touch is even supported. Now, just because you're on a smaller screen doesn't mean that it is a touch screen. Windows Phone 7.5 is a good example of this. Even though it's IE9 is the browser on that device, the touch implementation isn't supported, so that we need to be able to detect not only that the screen is small, but also whether we can use or implement those touch APIs. And using Modernizer to detect it, and then there's a number of jQuery libraries out there that'll help you actually implement this. I'm going to show you Touch Swipe as an example of how to actually implement, detect and implement things like swipe. So on our particular page, we may want to be able to have the swipe implementation on an individual item do something like navigate from one to another or move from one page to another. And the way we can do this is to actually do the swipe detection. I've got some code here that is used on our particular page, and I won't go into what the jQuery is here. I'm sorry, what the JavaScript is here, but let me add some additional code here. The first thing that I want to use is to actually use Modernizer to see whether it's supported or not. So I'm going to go ahead and do a little copy, and then talk about what this is doing. Modernizer is a library we're using, and I can just say Modernizer is touch enabled. So that on a particular device, when this page is executed, if touch isn't enabled, like it won't be on our particular device since this is a laptop, this will come back as false and none of the rest of the stuff will happen. If it is, then we can go ahead and do things like add touch device as a class to the body, and this is what's going to allow you to know when and even apply responsive styling to things that do support touch, so that you can have those sort of behaviors or even indicate visually to the user that it is a touch device. and then be able to write code like we see here, where we're adding execution on the main object of swipe to do things. In this case, I'm just popping up alerts, but you can see that we could use this code to add to existing pages this ability to deal with those touch interfaces. So unfortunately, again, because this isn't a touch device, I can't actually make this swipe for us. But we'll see that even though we're on a desktop refreshing this particular page, we don't get any feedback about it being touch or not touch because touch isn't supported here. But if we were to then open this up on a tablet or a phone, we'd be able to get that experience of swipe and not swipe. You can see this pretty evidently on the WilderMind site. If you open it up on a phone, we have a number of slideshows, and each of those slideshows is enabled so you can swipe with your finger instead of having to necessarily use the back and forth buttons. So let me answer a couple questions, and I want to go through a couple more pieces about responsive design. So the next question is, am I going to cover viewport? I'm not going to exactly, but I can talk about it very briefly. There's this discussion. Let me go to my layout page. When you're dealing with pages that you expect to be able to be displayed on any device, there's this discussion about this meta tag called viewport that you would put on the top of each page. And most of the websites I'm developing these days with HTML5, this is the viewport I'm putting on every page to make sure that the page is sized to the same size as the device width. We can see here it's saying that to set the viewport or the view of the individual web page to be the same width as the device width. And so this is what this is doing is it's forcing your page to attempt to size itself to the full page. This makes developing individual pages for webs for mobile devices a little simpler because you don't have to deal with the what's the word I'm looking for? You don't have to deal with the problem of sort of zooming in and zooming out and having different size elements. The device itself is going to expect that your site is exactly the same size as the device width itself. This does mean that zooming in and zooming out may be a little bit more precarious on these devices, but because you're using responsive design, they shouldn't need to zoom in and zoom out in order to read the text. And that's sort of an important element here is that you should be making these changes in responsive design to deal with the individual device sizes so that the user doesn't have to go through the more typical, like go to a website and then I have to double-click to zoom in order maybe to read the text, or more probably they haven't done this and I'm having to scroll left and right in order to read an article. Hope that answers that question. So the Harley Z's question is, what would I suggest for a menu with a second tier that involves hovering? I'm going to try to answer this as best as I can. I don't have a suggestion because in a lot of ways, what I'm doing when I'm dealing with sort of the hover drop-down menu discussion, one is I tend to not use them very often, the whole drop-down, because they work so badly on devices. But if I do need to use the hover, open menu, click an option sort of experience, I'm usually hiding them and showing a completely different experience on mobile devices when touch is enabled, or more importantly, when it's a smaller device where I can make some assumptions about touch, because they just don't work at all with touch. There is no hover with touch. This comes back to my discussion about you really have to define the experience based on mouse and touch being so different. You can't hover an inch above the touchscreen and imagine that it's going to detect that you're not quite ready to tap. That's just not the way that touch works. And so to come back to the example that I showed here, I would much normally, if these were drop-downs, when I got onto the other devices, I'd move it to something like a select or a stylized select, something that's more obvious to touch users. Next question is, what is my opinion about using responsive frameworks like lessframework.com? I'm not familiar with Less Framework or other responsive frameworks, to be honest with you. I know that there's some responsive development both in the default MVC for template design. There's also some things coming out of the what's it called? The Twitter, not Wireframe. My mind's going blank about it. But I'm sure that someone will come up with some better solutions around responsive design frameworks. One of the things I don't really discuss in this talk, but I will mention briefly, is that using a framework like Less that actually allows you to do metaprogramming over your CSS will make doing some of this responsive design a little easier, where you can break your CSS into better components with composing the CSS, using includes, being able to use computed values to change objects based on screen size and such. Does make developing responsive apps easier. I've chosen to do it all in CSS in this case, just to sort of simplify and not have to teach two ideas at once, but I usually involve both. Ben Mills' question is, how do mobile sites scale to super high resolutions like Retina screens? The answer here is that his question was, is everything tiny? And the answer is no. But what you do need to deal with is the problem of DPI. Now, what I mean by that is you may design for a mobile screen with low resolutions by, in fact, delivering lower resolution versions of images, of icons and such. When you start to deal with things like the iPad 3 or the Retina display on Apple, you'll find that these are going to start to get a little pixely. And so one of the other solutions you'll see out there is in responsive design is actually changing URLs for things in based on the screen size as well. And so using something like media query that's detecting the really high resolution would allow you to kind of do the opposite of what we were talking about for really small devices, and that is being able to make sure that the font sizes are pushed up to be appropriate for that, because right now, if you're dealing with font sizes that are fixed at 12 or 14 and you scale it to these large displays, everything will get small. You're going to want to deal with the high resolution displays in the same way you do the low resolution. Change the DPI of images and change the size of fonts appropriately. Because if you just, if you're just doing everything like this site, everything would get really small and really high resolution displays. So the responsive design isn't just about going down, it's about adapting to all display sizes. Just like what we're seeing here is a resolution of 1280 by 720, I believe, which is a fairly low resolution desktop display. It would be a fairly high resolution tablet display, but on the desktop it's fairly low. As we get up to the high end, we're going to find that a lot of these elements are going to get much, much smaller, and so we could either deal with that as percentages or more likely dealing with media queries that go all the way up the scale. The next question by Z.Away is pretty much the same thing I was just mentioning. Is iPad 3 or the Retina display suitable for using media queries? And absolutely it is. Because the media query doesn't care about what those ranges of screen size are. It just recognizes that we can have those screen sizes. So we could certainly have Retina display media queries that did the reverse, pumped up the font size, changed the width and height of containers and those sorts of things to really deal with the larger resolution displays. Greg answered, luckily, for my sake, that the framework I was thinking about is the Twitter Bootstrap. I always forget that name. So if you actually Matthew Troop also mentioned it. It is called Twitter Bootstrap. You can get that from twitter.com, and that's sort of a boilerplate of starting a site. It includes a bunch of stuff around responsive design, standard frameworks, standard MVC implementation, those sorts of things. So if you're interested in getting down to those, that's a good place to start. Let's go back to the our design, and let's talk about some other techniques that are important here. So again, we're dealing with responsive design as it relates to just screen widths here. Now, one of the things you'll have to understand is that when we're dealing with these, we're really dealing with the cascading nature of CSS. So let's show that as an example. Let's go to my resize for, let's say, the iPhone. And when I'm looking at the size of one of these objects, I noted, I told you earlier I'm using 1/2. And so 1/2 is defined as float left and then size normally of 460. But because this comes later in our design, it only becomes later in our design because it's at the bottom of the file and inside one of these media queries, it is overtaking or overriding this rule for us. As we go to a smaller size, we can see that the 1/2 is now that 100% and float because the new media query has kicked in, the old one has disappeared. And so that's something that it's just the nature of CSS to allow us to do that. What's interesting is that in many cases, you're not just going to have these segments. You're going to have, let's create another media query so I can kind of explain this. This was sort of implied by that chart that's in my talk, but it may not be super obvious. I may decide that for all devices that are min 768 to have font size, let's say 1.4 em. So let's make the font size a little bigger. This means that not only do we have the 1/2 up here that is going to be applied, right? Both of these rules are going to be applied, but I'm also going to get this and this, if both of these rules apply. So these media rules aren't exclusive to each other, they're additive. So if my screen is greater than 768 and is between these, both of these sections of rules are going to apply. And that's an important idea because you're going to run into very quickly where you're going to want to say, okay, for all tablet sizes, I want to set that, let's say, the font size of my body. But for portrait, I want to be able to set the width, and for landscape, I want to change that width. And that's really common in the way you're going to be doing these media queries. If we go back to the slides for a minute just to tie this together, normally when I'm dealing with this, I'm really dealing with a main CSS and then a media query for each of these different boxes. Now, as we've said, that 0 to 767 is an inclusive media query that will include things that are common to both mobile and landscape portrait. Another technique that I want to talk about is changing size of elements as well. So when we're looking at this, we talked about a couple of things that are interesting. One is changing sort of the widths and the float nature of it, and we talked about changing the elements by hiding and showing elements. We can also take these elements and really decide how we want to lay things out. So if we come, go to my notes real quick so I remember where this is. There it is. Display title. So you may decide on the small version to also change the header title. Not only change the font, but to change how we're laying it out. We could even say, get rid of the float and position absolute. So that here on our page, when we go to display it, we should get less of the overflow. I've actually forgotten to tell it where to position it absolute, but you can make these decisions about exactly how to do these elements in these particular sizes. So it gives you a lot of flexibility over how you want to lay things out. The technique I've talked about where you're hiding and showing, I wouldn't get too involved in a lot of that. There are some cases like the navigation bar where it becomes pretty useful to do that. But if you start to, be implementing two or three or even four controls on a page that you're hiding and showing based on different resolutions, I don't suggest that as a best practice. I really suggest that as sort of a beginning point or sort of the edge before you start to getting to actually creating a specific mobile views, especially for mobile platforms. Let me answer a new question that's come in. So, Martin missed how, actually, I can't remember, oh, Matrix has you, 2K4, said, I missed how you converted the nav to a select list with CSS or JavaScript. Let me walk through that again, because I may have glossed over it. I'm actually doing it in all, in CSS purely. And the way I'm doing that is, in my layout page, I'm implementing both. Here's my navigation section that's at the top. I'm creating a unordered list, and this is the one we typically see as the list on the top of the pages for most people, but I'm also doing a select or a drop-down box that includes that same information. Now, this drop-down box would need JavaScript behind it so that when it's changed, it does this navigation for me, but that's not difficult to implement. I'm not going to show you the JavaScript for that. That's just a simple jQuery piece that's not important to discussion. What is important here is that by default in my CSS, let me go up to where the menu is set up. It was just here a minute ago. Is that my menu is set up as you would expect, just some different rules for the different parts of the unordered pound menu, and then the select in my nav, you'll notice that I'm specifying size and width and all that so I can have the design, but I'm also specifying not to display it. So that by default, even though this is on the page, it's missing. It's not displayed at all. It's only in my media query for phones, for this very small screen size, do I tell it to take the unordered list and get rid of it and display the select instead. So I'm able to, you know, do this pretty succinctly by having these different rules hide or show elements on a particular page using that same facility. So Matt Sullivan has asked the question, what are my thoughts on designing for mobile first? I don't think it's a first or last discussion. For me, it's kind of an all-in-one. Some people are starting with kind of the design for mobile first because the idea is that a lot of websites are being browsed to by mobile initially. And this, I think, more comes down to what you're developing. If you're developing an enterprise app, mobile first might not make a lot of sense unless you're mostly dealing with people in the field. If you're dealing with a, you know, sort of youth market consumer app, yep. I'd probably design mobile first because that's going to be the experience where people are going to see it first. The important piece for me is that I'm going to have to design both or all regardless, right? I'm going to have to actually deal with it. And finding designers, because I'm not good at pixels, honestly, finding designers who understand this, understand responsive design, and understand good design touch versus mouse is crucial in this whole story for me. I don't actually do most of my own design. When I'm dealing with designers that aren't as amenable to it, I'll have to go ahead and dive in and use the media queries to make those exceptions. I've been able to take some desktop design sites and make them usable as mobile sites, but you're really going to want to usually find someone who has those design skills, whether they're a web designer or a web developer, to do that sort of work, especially if you personally don't have it. If you're dealing with more of the enterprise, where you are the designer, the developer, and everything, it's simply a matter of going back and forth to finding those exceptions to make it look in the right way for your particular design. If you're dealing with much more of an app, it may be that creating mobile-specific views is just the better approach. There is a line where you're trying to spend so much time making one page act very differently on very different devices that developing it twice is just a better solution. Prather asks, earlier did I say it was possible to use CSS queries to add other CSS classes? You can't, I didn't say it was possible to add or remove CSS classes, but what you can do with media queries is add rules to those classes or add properties to those classes. So you may have a class that is applied on an element that is empty in your main CSS but that only has specifications in one of the media queries. You can't have the media query magically go add and remove classes. You can certainly do that with JavaScript, but for the most part, with responsive design, you're more going to want to add and remove different elements inside the actual rule. You're not going to want to switch between the mobile rule and the non-mobile rule using CSS because that doesn't really work. You'd rather have the same, I've defined something as this is a class that is the game description, and then have the game description in the way it displays change between media query and non-media query. So, those are the big elements of responsive design, is to make these larger discussions of how you want to make changes as you're dealing with the different screen widths. Now, one of the important ideas here that you're going to want to get your head around is that responsive design is going to allow you to react to these different screen widths, but they aren't going to allow you to react to specific devices. So if you want your app to look like something specifically, lots of transparent blues on an iPhone or on an iMac or on an iPad, but then use more of a metro design on a Windows phone or on a Windows 8 tablet, that's something that responsive design doesn't really deal with, because responsive design isn't going to be able to look into the headers and do header sniffing to detect what device. I think there's a talk later today. I'd have to go back and look at the schedule, but I thought there was, about mobile views in MVC4, ASP.NET MVC4, and that's really a solution for that. Responsive design is just one of those tools that you're going to need to have in your quiver to make your applications work across these different mobile platforms. And we do have one more question before we get to the takeaways. So for global templates and responsive designing, Kevin asks, would you recommend using images for your global wrapper or 100% CSS, CSS3? Well, probably a mix. So the question really revolves around the problem of DPI. There's sort of a push-pull. You can certainly use CSS to define images and rasters, vectors that will design certain things in your system. But at some point, if they're complex enough, I think you're going to get perf problems, especially when you're dealing with mobile devices. And so I would probably do a mix. I would do for the sort of the high end, the Retina display, and I would probably do more of that because I know I might necessarily have more horsepower there, and where I want to avoid pixelization, and I may use images for the low end because they tend to be cached and rendered faster on the on those smaller devices. And Z.Away asks, my thought on using a 960 grid system and how it fits into responsive design. I'm a fan of grid systems out there. 960 is usually the one I actually use for some of the work I've been doing, but again, I usually lean on my designers for that. It fits into responsive design relatively well because the nature of the grid systems is to size themselves to particular pages. So much like what we saw today with the, one half, one third, one quarter, where we could change those on those, with the grid systems, you may, get two across or four across or one across based on your screen size, and it is a pretty good system for doing that. Depends a lot on your content, though. The idea of whether things wrap or they don't wrap, display top to bottom versus left to right, may not fit in with the kind of content you're trying to deliver at all. If you look at the way that some of the new sites do it, they do a pretty good job of where on a small screen you're really getting one story on top of another, and then on a large screen, it's a very different experience. On a large screen, you're getting maybe two or three or four columns of data, and in some of those cases, they're simply truncating or clipping out the additional columns that you can't see on smaller devices. So this demo and the slides will be available at wildermuth.com, my blog. Should be by, tomorrow morning, I believe, is when I'll have them up there. Some important links about some of the things we've talked about, Modernizer, Touch Swipe, some of the mobile frameworks, and then obviously MVC4, though if you're at this conference, you're probably already familiar with ASP.NET. And there's a link to my company. If you have any other questions, feel free to contact me at my blog or respond to the blog entry, and we can go ahead and answer those questions for those who didn't want to answer them before. And let's just make sure there aren't any last-minute questions before we wrap up. The only one left is someone thanking me, so I appreciate the feedback, and I hope everyone has a great ASP Conf today, and thank you very much.